Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Welcome to the IL Women Podcast. I am Matt Kinnear, joined by Emily Considine and a special guest, Deemer Class from First Class Lacrosse, and a whole bunch of women's lacrosse experience. We've got a good show. It's midseason, so we're calling this midseason week here at Inside Lacrosse. Shout out to Alyssa, who is officially on maternity leave, and we can't wait to see her back toward the end of this lacrosse season and into the summer. But for now, we're going to keep it going with a look at what has happened so far in an exciting season, full of surprises, but also full of some steady, dominant teams at the top of the rankings. This podcast is brought to you by NCAA Men's and Women's NCAA Championship Weekend. The NCAA Men's and Women's Championship Weekends are headed back to Gillette Stadium, held jointly for the first time since 2017, May 23rd to May 26th. Nowhere else in the lacrosse world to be than Foxborough, Massachusetts. Eight of the best games of the season, the best and most impactful games of the season. Action will start that Friday with the Women's D1 Semifinals, continue Saturday with the men's D1 semis. That championship action starts on Sunday. The men's D2 and the men's D3 championship and the women's D1 championship. And then culminating Monday afternoon with the men's D1 final. That is a lot of lacrosse in one weekend. This year, Inside Lacrosse is proud to partner with the NCAA to offer you, our loyal listeners, $5 off single-day tickets. This is both for men and women. Use the code ILPOD at checkout. That's NCAA.com/laxtickets and enter ILPOD at checkout to purchase your tickets. You know you're going to be there for championship weekend, so you might as well save $5 and let them know how much you love Inside Lacrosse in this podcast. That's NCAA.com/laxtickets, ILPOD at checkout, $5 off your tickets. All right, Deemer. We brought you on the show this week. You know, you've been helping us out with a lot of things here at Inside Lacrosse and, you know, All Americans and some feedback. And wanted to introduce you a little bit more in depth to the readers. People might know you, you know, from your awesome playing days at Duke, one of the two-time national champion, right? Two national championships at Duke. Amazing outside shooter, multi-time All American, pro career. But you've had, you know, basically a decade now of, you know, really dialed in experience in women's lacrosse. And so just wanted to share a little bit of that. How did you get kind of most involved in women's lacrosse after college, and what kind of drew you into it once you started to learn more about the nuance of the sport?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for the kind intro, Matt. Excited to be here. You guys are doing an awesome job with coverage, men's and women's, this spring. So keep it up. And yeah, it's been a really fun journey. I think since graduating, really took me 1 year from my graduation to really dive back into lacrosse. And, you know, I can remember first getting started when some of my sister's friends just started reaching out about some training and some shooting. And that's what I started First Class on, was, you know, shooting and clinics and offensive development. I have three younger sisters. My youngest, Ava, is a fifth-year grad student at Michigan, so have been enjoying watching her play over the years, and she played high school at McDonough. And my other two sisters, Cabrini and Marisa, played at Roland Park. And so really from their experience, you know, some of their friends started reaching out. I would say, you know, compared to some of my friends and peers, just had more of a, you know, invested interest in watching the women's game from a younger age. And then when I started, you know, working with more players, you know, the first thing that I really tried to focus on was the film, you know, and learning the game, and, you know, wanted to make sure that I was up to date. What concepts was I seeing? You know, what things should we be focused on? And it's been, I would say, in the 8 to 9 years of really watching the women's game grow, I think a lot has changed and evolved. You know, when I was younger, I can't say I really spent much time watching it or can remember going to too many games, but it seems like I really caught a wave where, you know, rules evolving, sticks evolving, shot clock, and it's been a really exciting time to be a part of it. And I think now more than ever, you know, I'll just speak to the offensive side, but defensive too, principles of the game, whether it's field, box, sixes, men's, women's, I think they're all, you know, converging on each other. And I think good lacrosse can really transcend the type of game you're playing. And then I think obviously, you know, there's going to be nuances in every version of the game. And so being a part of the women's game has been awesome. You know, have gotten to work with a lot of different players playing in college. I coached 3 seasons at USC and then 2 seasons with Mary Gagnon at St. Paul's. We had a couple of great teams there, and so it's been awesome to be a part of.
Yeah, like you said, focus on the film, you know, was one of the things that you kind of started with the principal. And, you know, that's something that you see through First Class Lacrosse and, you know, all of your social channels and some of this great kind of film breakdown that you guys do. But when you talk about that, like on the offensive side of the ball, what have you seen as maybe like over this past 8 years, you know, what are the big innovations that you've seen on the field from the offensive perspective?
Well, one of the things that, you know, well, I would say there's 2 things that really stick out. And again, you know, innovation wise, it just seems like from what was occurring prior, it's been this combination of rules, stick technology, and, you know, maybe just, again, coaches being more open to things or things just being permitted more. But the 2 that stand out to me are the types of shots being shot. You know, I think you're seeing shooters be more aggressive in shooting around defenders, shooting with contact on their hands. I think you're seeing more shooters, you know, take those 8-meter rips or power shots, you know, whatever terminology you like to use, and use that like wind up shooting motion as a real part of their game and a tool in their tool belt. I think the other one that, you know, really comes to mind is the pick play, you know, and how common 2-player and 3-player games on and off the ball are becoming. You know, I remember at McDonough with, you know, Taylor Cummings and then, you know, at Maryland too, I feel like that post play, you know, that off ball pick and slip was like a staple of, you know, Maryland, and they would always score on it because it was so tough to defend that pick and slip on the inside. And now you're just seeing it a lot more and less scripted too, for a lot of different offenses. And I remember my first or second year starting to teach skills, and one of the, you know, coaches had just said, hey, you know, working on pick play is a waste of time because they always get called for illegal screens. And so I think that rule and how it's called and dictated has evolved. So it's just, to me, it's been worth teaching, and you're seeing crafty players take advantage of that. So I think those are 2 that stick out to me. And, you know, I think the athleticism just, you know, only is continuing to increase, and the skill and the talent. You know, it's insane what some of these players are doing, you know, with their sticks. But those are 2 things that stick out, you know, theme wise. And then I think you're always seeing a lot of great Dodgers and off ball movement.
Yeah. And like you said, it's convergence of a lot of things. The rules, certainly the shot clock as probably the main one, but several others as well. Stick technology has just, I mean, gone light years in the past decade from what it used to be. And then, you know, you get to see it at kind of a much younger level through, you know, First Class Lacrosse. You get to see these young athletes who aspire to be the next college players. And when you watch, you know, these really, whenever I go to your events, it's like these just like, I watch the talent in the field and I'm like, what the heck just happened? Like, in terms of, and this is no shade on anyone that's come before or anything like that, but there's just a level of like, you know, speed, athleticism, but just skill is just so unbelievable. When you come to your events and you watch it, you know, and these are 15-year-old girls and 14-year-old girls who are just doing things that like you didn't realize was possible. But when you see them and when you talk to them, like, I guess just like how much is the future of the game in really good hands right now?
Oh, I think it's amazing. And, you know, I will acknowledge, only having done this for 8 years, I don't have as much to compare to prior. So I do try to speak to just what I see now. And mm-hmm. I just think it's so exciting because the dedication and the focus from, you know, these young female athletes that we get to work with is off the charts. You know, I feel like whether it's fourth, fifth, sixth grade to seventh, eighth to 11th, 12th, you know, whether it's my small groups or our bigger events, you know, they're just showing up so hungry to learn and are coachable and try to implement the things that, you know, are being taught. And I think where the game is getting to at the college level, the pro level and younger is a product of those players spending and dedicating more time to their craft. And we do hear a lot of negative around, I think, the year-round play and, you know, the desire and goal for the multi-sport athlete, which, mm-hmm. you know, I full-heartedly agree with. Like, I played football and I played basketball through ninth grade. You learn so much through that. But there's also no doubt that when you are spending more months out of the year with the stick in your hands and watching the game, attending games, playing club, high school, middle school, and just dedicating yourself to it, you know, there's even just on social media, like I'll get tagged in these videos of, you know, kids in middle school and they're out there working on these crazy wall ball tricks and trying moves and dodges, and they're working with their strength coaches, and just the dedication is incredible. And so I just think it's so exciting to see. And for any players that are listening to this, you know, I would just say, like, keep doing what you're doing or keep doubling down on it, you know, because I think there's so much opportunity, you know, there's so much opportunity in terms of amount of teams at the college levels, you know, 1, 2, and 3. And, you know, there's more high schools adding lacrosse and more club programs than ever out there. So, you know, if you want to play this game, like, just keep putting the time in it, you'll find a home. And it's really exciting. So I've really enjoyed it. I joke sometimes when people ask me coaching men's versus women's, I'm like, man, and I could think about my friends in high school and us, like, the girls are more focused, you know, like, it's just, we see it more at a younger age. They're like, this is my thing. Like, this is what I want to do. And it's incredible. And I think you're seeing that on the field at all levels.
One of the great things that, and we'll get into the college results from this past weekend, one of the things that I loved is the visibility increasing so much. You had so many games that were on linear TV, you know, this weekend and coming up, the Big Ten Network, the ACC Network, there was a game on ESPNU. So that only helps, you know, it's kind of a flywheel effect, right? When you get more visibility, you get more people interested. And, you know, when they see it at the highest level, they want to emulate that. So we look at this week, some really interesting scores. And I'm going to ask you guys, what was the most intriguing score and result of this weekend? But I'll run down a few of them. Syracuse 12, Notre Dame 11. The Orange have kind of had this brutal schedule in terms of the teams that they have faced, and week in and week out, the way that they are tested. The biggest upset of the weekend, Brown 14, Yale 11. Then we had the Big Ten battle between the sports two historic powers, Northwestern 16, Maryland 4. And then Boston College 17, Stanford 9. That was a top 5 game over there on the West Coast. Going back a few days into midweek, Florida beat Clemson 16-10. Michigan beat USC 11-9. And Colorado 7, Stony Brook 6. Emily, let's start with you. When you look at all those scores and hear those, what kind of surprised you most about this past weekend?
I mean, I have to touch base on Brown-Yale to start off. I think that was, you know, I think Katrina has done a phenomenal job at Brown. Before she got there, their last winning season was in 2019 when they were 8-7. Now they're 6-2, and they had a winning season last year. I think she's a phenomenal coach, and the team is obviously rallying around her coaching style. But to take down the number 7 team at the time is pretty impressive for a team that, you know, just had a winning season for the first time last year in a while. So, you know, Katrina's obviously doing a phenomenal job there, and the rest of her coaching staff. They have some great recruits and they're producing. And it wasn't, you know, just, you know, a one goal win. You know, they won 14-11. So there was a statement made there.
Yeah, and a lot of times when you think of those, like, upset wins, you're like, oh my gosh, the goalie, like, stood on their head. Like, no, this was just kind of a, like, this was a team that went out there and played better as a unit than the other team. And when you talk about, you know, Deemer, you were just talking about this offensive innovation. I mean, there's probably no better example, right, than Katrina and what she's done in her career and what she's doing with this Brown team in terms of a team that's kind of reinventing what you can do offensively. And Yale, give them credit. You know, they've played a tough schedule. They've had a tough few weeks. They had an easier early part of the schedule, and then they've kind of come through a tough few weeks with some big battles. And they're going to be there in the end, right, with the Ivy League tournament. They're going to be competing for that Ivy League championship and probably going deep into May. But when you look at this, you know, you're going to have losses is the thing. And it's not college football. It's more like college basketball. And that's kind of the way we have to look at it in terms of, like, you can't expect that, like, you're going to go through a whole season unscathed. You're going to come through some adversity and you're going to have losing streaks and whatever. So they'll be fine in the end. Deemer, what about you? What stood out from this weekend?
Yeah, well, Matt, real quickly, I would just add to that as well, just because I think it's also interesting. You know, look, I think you can look at the Boston College score and be like, hey, they're doing that to a lot of teams, right? Mm-hmm. You're winning by 11 goals. They're probably looking at the Cornell one like, hey, that was a learning moment for them. Like, if you look at the Yale win, that's probably some growth on their end from losing that game and going through that and making adjustments. And it's kind of fascinating, you know, top five of their six scorers, all seniors, you know. Mm-hmm. So when you also think of Katrina's impact and just, you know, evolving this offensive unit, building chemistry, you know, she's always been a, you know, magical mind offensively. You know, everyone I've come across has just raved about how she thinks about the game and comes up with drills and, you know, which I think is just awesome. You know, like, she's always been someone I've tried to learn from or pick her brain any chance I get. You know, and then you see someone like, I posted a reel the other day, Leah Caputo, you know, she scored from 12 meters, you know, against Boston College, just cranking one around a defender and then steps down against Yale. So, like, you're just seeing the confidence that they're playing with, which is really cool. So, you know, they got Harvard and Duke coming up. You know, I think both those teams, like, they're going to be, you know, really having to put a lot of work in on the scout to get that win. Those are going to be battles. So I think great call out there. That definitely stuck out to me. You know, I would say, I don't know if it feels cheap or not to say, but I was surprised with the gap between Northwestern and Maryland, you know, in that game. I think really hot start for Northwestern. I think it was a 7-1 or 8-1 first quarter. But it also speaks to the growth and evolution of the Northwestern defense, you know, to hold a really good Maryland team with a lot of great athletes and offensive players to four goals, I think is really impressive. And, you know, speaks to Schweitzer and Cage, which was a huge, you know, mid-year pickup for them. So a lot of credit there to Northwestern, what they've done on the defensive side with that high pressure, you know, backer-like defense, you know, that interesting style that I don't think is easy to play against, you know, and scout. So, you know, now obviously well-documented Maddie Taylor with Skane and Coy Kendall moving on has just continued her dominance, you know, in her junior campaign. So, you know, she's really fun to watch. So I think that was a surprise to me because I thought that game would be a little closer, and obviously Maryland will make some adjustments come Big Ten tournament time.
Yeah, that's kind of what you know, Maryland's younger, you know, they've got at least young people in key roles with that team. And I can imagine how overwhelming Northwestern's defense feels when you're a young player. And especially when, you know, if you go to that facility that they have, like, it's kind of a unique, unusual, overwhelming place to play to begin with. And then, you know, when you have this defense, the way that they're playing, and obviously they're known for the offense just because they produce so many highlight reel goals and, like, things that you can't believe. But that defense is kind of, you know, I wouldn't say the defense is carrying that team, but I think the defense is the reason why the offense is able to do what they do. And Mary Carroll is a freshman there who's having an excellent season for the Wildcats. So be sure to look out for her. And I think that kind of brings up a little bit of, like, a, you know, when you look at that score and you look at the Boston College score, 17-9 over Stanford, and Stanford's a top 10 team, and deservedly so with the way that they've played this year. This is going to go into the midseason discussion here, but there's Boston College, there's North Carolina, and there's Northwestern. And right now it feels like these three teams are just kind of head and shoulders above everyone else. I mean, it feels a little bit like, can anyone even contend, you know, with any of these three teams right now? You know, the only loss among them was, you know, to each other with Northwestern versus Boston College. So that's kind of, you know, to start this midseason, like, are we just kind of like, are we resigned to just like, this is what it's going to be? It's going to be one of those teams versus the other team in championship. And, you know, we're all kind of playing for third or fourth place right now. Can anyone come close to them? Deemer, do you have any thoughts on who might be able to break this hierarchy?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think those three are, you know, comfortably sitting in that spot of, hey, come and get us. You know, we know who we are. We've got a lot of studs on every part of the field. You know, we're confident. If we get down a couple goals, we're coming back. And I think you see those three teams play like that. You know, where without even getting to rosters and talent and scheme and coaching, I think teams like that become very hard to beat, is that you see teams get 2-3 goal leads, hey, maybe even six. And why do the teams like those three come back? Is because they don't have any fear, you know? And so I think just come tournament time, conference play and NCAA, it's going to take a near perfect game scheme wise and plan wise. And each, you know, this next tier of teams, like their star players need to have great games. And then on top of that, they're going to have that mentality that we're coming in swinging right from the start and we're not going to back down. And I think that's the recipe, but I think that's a really difficult recipe to put together. And that's why I was also just back to Brown. You know, we just see a lot, I think. You know, I think there's more upsets and parity sometimes on the men's side. Like, I just feel like in the top 10, typically, like when those teams get advantages, it's harder for teams in the top 10 to 25 to make those upsets, you know? And so I think we are looking at those three, like, until someone really puts together those efforts at the right time to win a big conference tournament game or NCAA tournament, it's going to be hard to displace those three out of the final four.
Yeah. Emily, any thoughts or any weakness you see? Anything that, like, I mean, it feels like we have three near perfect teams.
Yeah, I completely agree with Deemer. I think, you know, while Northwestern is ranked number three right now, I kind of feel like they're in the best spot of the three because they've seen a loss to Boston College early on. They've been the only one to really have, you know, a contestable game. The other two teams are just blowing teams out. And so is Northwestern, but they do have that one game where they can kind of see where their holes were and then regroup and move on from there. The other teams are going to head into ACC play a little bit later and, you know, maybe finding their holes a little bit later, which could be, you know, a little bit of an issue. But I mean, the top three right now are the top three. I don't really see anyone coming close.
One thing I'm curious about, and you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but when I remember watching some of the Boston College Northwestern film, I felt like for a majority of the game, Northwestern was playing woman to woman defense. Mm-hmm. You guys, I don't know if you guys recall that or not, but like I saw some of that, and part of me I kind of thought about it in two ways. One, hey, early season, zone's not installed. Maybe that's the type of defense that, you know, Coach Imani Hiller is going for, right? Number two, I thought, hey, this could just be strategic that they didn't want to show them their zone and mm-hmm. get them the comfort level against that zone in the early season so that now when BC preps for them in the tournament, they haven't played and felt that zone, which the only other team I would say you're getting really good looks at that zone is Hopkins. Mm-hmm. You know, well, I think Hopkins is going to sit in a good spot to make a Big Ten run as well because of their style of play.
Yeah, I do think that there's an element of like playing chess when everyone else is playing checkers to this, you know, in terms of like, I think that was early season, you know, this is oversimplifying it, but let's roll the ball out there and see what we have. And, you know, the result in itself doesn't matter in the grand scheme of our season. Obviously, you want to win every game, but you just want to go out there and kind of like know that you're going to build on this for something greater. So I think that there is, you know, an aspect of that, but I'm happy you brought up Johns Hopkins because, you know, in talking about this, like, can any team, you know, test these three? It feels to me like Johns Hopkins has a little bit of a weird team of destiny thing going on where I do not think that there's by any reasonable expectation you would call them the favorite when they're playing North Carolina, Boston College, or Northwestern. But there's something about this team that feels like kind of unpredictable, a little bit crazy, and just like something could happen where they end up making a run and knocking off someone that they shouldn't. They're just that team this year. Three overtime wins, a bunch of one goal games. Like you said, the way that they play is unique. They've got like a very forward thinking, innovative young coach. They've got seniors in key places, but they've also got freshmen in key places too. You know, when you look at the draw control. So I don't know, Johns Hopkins. I just have a little bit of a like. You know, this is not necessarily based on anything really tangible as much as just a gut feeling of like this team just has something special. Emily, like, I don't know. Am I crazy?
No, I completely agree. And those one goal games have been really impressive. You know, they obviously have a good strategy down. They have confidence in themselves and each other to compete and run with the best. I agree. I would love to see them in that fourth spot in the Final Four. I think that'd be really cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, the tournament would be great too.
Yeah. Yeah. And Matt, like, you know, just think about that kind of when I was mentioning the no fear piece. Mm-hmm. You know, if when you get Hopkins in that mix versus a Northwestern, you know, who knows them better than Hopkins? You know, one conference opponent, but two, you know, Tim spending, I think it was 6 or 7 seasons coaching mm-hmm. there. They run very similar styles, similar zone defenses, a lot of two-player, three-player action on and off the ball, really nice balance of lefties and righties. And so, and then to your point of, you know, possible team of destiny, you know, Mackin, Case, Charlotte Smith, you know, three seniors, you know, playing a lot in the offensive end, Kielbasa, senior. And then you've got really nice sophomore feeder and Taylor Haas and, you know, Lacey Downey's been a nice transfer for them, I believe, right, mm-hmm. from Boston College. So some key pieces there. And then Ava Angelo as a junior. So they've been down. They've come back in some big games already. So why would they have any fear? They've done it before. They'll do it again. Like, that's going to be their mantra, you know, headed into some of these big games. So Hopkins, Maryland's going to be fun to watch. Hopkins, Northwestern, you know, that could be that battle could happen three times, theoretically, mm-hmm. regular season, Big Ten tournament, and then NCAA tournament. So we'll see how, you know, it's always hard to beat a team three times.
Yeah. And it doesn't get, you know, any easier for Johns Hopkins. They got James Madison this week, midweek game. They've got Northwestern coming up. They've got Michigan coming up. They've got Maryland. As you said, the Big Ten is just, you know, one of those leagues where you're going to have to be tested week in and week out. The flip side of that is, you know, you talk about all these one goal games. They could be 4-5, right? You know, they're 7-2 right now, but they could be 4-5 very easily. So don't want to pump the brakes. They did get those wins, and there is something to be said for winning close. But it goes both ways as well. So teams that we haven't talked about enough, or put another way, like, what's a team that maybe is just kind of floating there in the middle that has the potential to make a rise? Deemer, I'll start with you.
You know, I would say I've been really pleasantly surprised by Stanford, and mm-hmm. I wouldn't discount the loss to Boston College as, you know, hey, they're not for real, you know? So, I think Danielle Spencer's teams have always done great at the draw control and on the circle. So we know come tournament time, possession battles are key. Really have loved, you know, some of their offensive firepower. So that's a team that, you know, I think, you know, could certainly be poised to make a run in ACC play. So that's going to be an interesting one. And, you know, again, they've had some ups and downs, but I still think Florida has a lot of talent. You know, that's a team that, you know, again, they've got that early season win over Hopkins. They got hot at the right time last year. And that's where I do think, outside of those three teams, this feels like a tournament that could feel like the March Madness of women's lacrosse, where there could be some teams that just come together at the right time. There's a lot of talented players on a lot of teams, and all you got to do is win the next game, you know? And so that this might not be another, this could be another season where we see another Denver, you know, crack into that Final Four and give everyone a good run. And who knows how the seedings are going to, you know, lay out. So that's kind of my thought there.
Yeah. One team we haven't really mentioned is Syracuse. And Emily, I know you played for them, so maybe you're biting your tongue to not bring them up. But that's a team that, again, I mentioned earlier in this, that the schedule they've played has been almost unfair in terms of the teams that they play week in, week out. They're going to be battle tested. But the reason that's so important is because they're so young. They need to play those like high pressure situations and get those, you know, these players aren't going to be freshmen when they're looking at the first week of May. They're going to be, you know, basically they're going to be playing in more big games than most, you know, college athletes play in their entire career, just because of the way that Syracuse's schedule has been this year. So look for them to kind of be one of those teams that, like, if they've been a little bit up and down this year, they could be hitting, you know, the sweet spot after the ACC tournament and into May. Emily, what's your team in that category of, you know, potential to rise or hasn't been, talked about quite enough?
Well, to go off your Syracuse point a little bit, it does seem like the past few games they've been kind of playing to other teams' level. You know, Loyola and Notre Dame haven't had the most successful seasons that they've had in the past. And those are 1 and 2 goal games for them. And then you have, you know, other teams like, you know, Stanford that's doing really well this year is also a 1 goal game. So it's a little interesting. I agree. They're probably, you know, still working on their groove, and we'll see what comes. But a team I'm interested to see how they do specifically in conference is Princeton. You know, their opening game, they lost a close game to Virginia. And then the next game they beat Loyola. Since then, they've had a little bit of an easier schedule. But I think they could, you know, really strongly compete in the Ivy League.
Virginia, the team that they played kind of back in, which seems like an eternity ago, in mid-February, is another one to talk about. They just got that sophomore class that's really incredible. And I think, you know, still being kind of young, I think you see a little bit of Jekyll and Hyde to them. You know, a lot of their games, you know, think of the Duke game where they were down really big, and, you know, the Navy game. There's just been times where they've taken a quarter off, it seems like. You know, even against North Carolina, they were leading and just kind of right there with the Tar Heels for the first half. And then it just felt like things went off a cliff a little bit. So then putting together a full four quarters, you know, we'll see how dangerous they can be. And they've got Syracuse up next. So, you know, quite a team to do that against. And they've got Maryland and Boston College still left on their schedule. So a lot of time there. Continuing along, team you are most surprised about at midseason, Deemer.
I would say for me, just surprise wise, is Princeton. You know, I think, you know, Emily, I think that's a great call out. 7-1, I think, again, early season game, you know, again, good battle versus UVA. You know, I think depending how they get through their conference play, you know, I think they're going to be one that I want to see against some of these, you know, top five teams. You know, I'm going to be curious how the Yale game goes and some of the other Ivies that have been maybe more battle tested at a conference. But, you know, I think Princeton is one that has really positively surprised me when I watch clips and film of Blake, their attacker. You know, I think she's, again, someone that, you know, has great skill, is putting up a lot of goals on the board, approaching 40 goals, which is a lot, I think, in the Ivy. So, you know, again, like, that's going to be a team, you know, for me to watch. And that's where, look, like, getting hot at the right time and, you know, playing your game and believing in your game, I think can really be what pushes people over the edge come tournament time.
Emily, who surprised you?
I've been a little surprised by Duke in a good way. I think, you know, they've struggled the last few years. So seeing them have some momentum is really cool just because it is a really big lacrosse school. I think the Clemson win gave them a little bit more confidence. And, you know, they only lost by one to Hopkins. So we can see what happens with them as we move into the ACC play. But they have some really great players. You know, Bella Goodwin has been dominant for them on the offensive end. And, you know, I would like to see them do well. And I'm excited to see what they can do.
Yeah, they kind of came into that Clemson game as underdogs. Clemson was probably at its peak in terms of like the hype right around the program. And Duke kind of quieted that, you know, in that game. And, you know, Clemson has kind of gone on to lose a few, which I guess I can kind of talk about them as a surprise. I think they're ahead of schedule would be the way that I would put Clemson. I think everyone expects that program to be, you know, a program that's competing for national championships. Obviously, it takes time to do that, and they are stacking really good recruiting classes to get to that, and they have tremendous institutional support, you know, which is one of the key ingredients, and obviously a great coaching staff there. It felt like they arrived a little, you know, when they beat Notre Dame earlier in the year, it felt like, oh, maybe they're here ahead of schedule. You know, maybe it's not next year's class that's going to do it. It's this year. They've kind of come back down to earth a little bit, but that's kind of what you get, right? When you're a young program, even though they do have a mix of, you know, veterans who have transferred in and you know, kind of youngsters and veterans and experienced coaching staff, like that's what happens when you're a new program is you got to go through those, like, you got to go through that 3-game losing skid. You got to go through that, like, where you're the favorite and you lose a game. And how do you deal with that as opposed to being the team that's always the underdog? It's, you know, in some ways, it's easier to be the underdog than it is to be, you know, the favored one, because there's no sense of disappointment when you lose that game as an underdog, so to speak. But when you go into a game and you're ranked and the other team isn't and you're suddenly on the ropes, that's a big teachable moment. So, you know, they should be getting those teachable moments all year. And I'm sure they're going to learn from them and we'll see the best from them in the ACC tournament. I call it trending up, trending down. So, you know, what's a player, a storyline, a team, a conference that is kind of on the upward swing and something that's on the downward swing? I'll go with one, a trending. I just thought of this as we were talking. Trending up the Big East Conference race, because I think that you could have like pinned this into like, you know, looking at the beginning of the season, like, oh, well, Denver's going to win the Big East. Let's check that off. I don't think that is the case right now. And I think that's the case because of, you know, UConn is a team that has like kind of competed in that, like been on the cusp before, but Villanova looks really good this year. And they had a stretch where their record wasn't that great because of just, but they lost by one goal to Navy. They had a little bit of a bad outing against Stony Brook, and then they lost by one goal to Stanford. So you look at them as a 3-3 team and like, oh man, you know, whatever, it's Villanova. I don't know much more about them or whatever, but they've since gone on and won 4 more games. Jill Batchelor's a great coach. They've had like the ability to hold teams to like really super low, like 6-5 goals. I think that they've made the Big East one of the more intriguing races going into, you know, the final 4 weeks or so of the season here. Deemer, what you got?
I would say a trending down, and it's kind of been, you know, since the start of the season or so, I would just add Loyola to that mix. You know, I think that's one. Look, all of their losses in and of themselves are super quality losses, but it's a team, I think, on paper with a lot of returners and a lot of talent that, you know, is probably not moving in the direction right now that they want to be. But again, that could change heading into more of the thick of their conference slate. Probably not a team that I'd want to play come tournament time. So I'll just be curious to see how they respond and play down the stretch. But one that I think has been a little bit on the downswing for me last couple of weeks.
And they play against Navy this week, midweek game, which is kind of the, you know, I don't want to sell any of the other team's shorts, but that's like the de facto, like, you know, the preview of the Patriot League championship, at least it has been. And
they, you know, they've been fun to watch. I remember recruiting Mezzanise back when I was looking at the 21s, and she was just a do-it-all player. And so, you know, fun to see her really have a big senior year. And then Alyssa Chung has been one of the best freshmen in the country, just bringing a lot of spark and flair to that lefty wing for Navy. So that's going to be, you know, definitely a great battle when that time comes.
Navy's another one of those teams that feels a little Jekyll and Hyde, a little bit up and down. You know, kind of they've been playing to the opponent a little bit more than you would want them to. Obviously, they played against Florida, and, you know, this was after they came off a loss against Jacksonville. They played Florida to a one-goal game. And so it's kind of like, which team are we getting? So I think this week will go a long way, Navy versus Loyola, in clarifying the Patriot League picture. But like you said earlier, beating a team multiple times in one season is not easy. So don't fill out your bracket yet in terms of who is going to win the Patriot League based off of this week's performance. Emily, you got anything in terms of trending up or trending down?
Yeah, I have a team that's on the cusp. I think Ohio State is in a spot where they can either trend up or trend down based on their next game. Right now, they're ranked number 19, 8-1. I wouldn't say their schedule has been super strong, but there is something to be said about building confidence, which is something that they've done pretty well. They just had a one-goal loss to USC, which was their first loss of the season, you know, well into the season. And now they're entering, you know, the Big Ten play where, you know, it could go one of two ways. They can continue to, you know, surprise us, or it could be pretty tough. So I'm interested to see what they do and how they adjust throughout the conference.
And their opponent coming up would be a team I would put in a similar category of Michigan in terms of, like, you know, they were at such a high to start the year. You know, I think they were the team that we put a lot of hype behind preseason in terms of their, I believe we had them ranked number 3 in the preseason, deserved, you know, based on what they did and who they had coming back. Had a loss to Yale where they weren't really that competitive against them. And then they had a loss to Denver. You know, so there was definitely a trending down portion. But you look at their 14-12 loss to Maryland, a game that they were, you know, certainly could have won that game, and then beating USC. I wonder if we're kind of seeing them, you know, it feels like it's easier to kind of trend down, and then the trend up is a little bit more of a steady incline. So I wonder if we're getting into the part of their season where they're just going to quietly start stacking wins together, and by the time the Big Ten tournament comes, they're going to be the team that we thought that they were.
I think there's a lot to be said for, you know, every year, you know, now that we're coming out of COVID and there's less fifth years, and I think rosters are normalizing a bit, I think it just shows, like, when you recruit 8 or 9 kids a class, you know, you're going to have some years where, you know, how do freshmen, sophomores step up? You know, how do returners step into bigger roles? And it's not going to be, I think, as smooth of a climb as it is, as it's been for a lot of teams these last couple of years. So I think, you know, again, Michigan's a team that's still, you know, working through pieces, and you know, some players are playing some different roles, and I think that's the case for a lot of other programs. You know, you mentioned UVA, you know, 4 really impactful sophomores, you know, on the offensive end, again, still trying to, you know, hit their stride. And so, you know, again, that's where I think this back half of the season is going to be so exciting for teams 4 through 20, because there's still so much room for growth. And I think how teams handle those growth moments and handle those 1-goal losses or 2-goal losses and move forward versus panicking and, you know, setting the offense aflame or setting the draw team aflame, whatever it may be. You know, sometimes you need that. And then the next player steps up and all of a sudden that unit gets hot for whatever team we're talking about. But also there's something to be said for just digging your heels in, getting better and growing. And then the next time you face that team or similar teams come conference tournament time or, you know, big rivalry game at the end of the season, you're a different program 2 to 3 weeks from now. And I think that's what a lot of these teams have to prove to themselves, and what a lot of the, you know, freshmen and sophomores that are stepping in the bigger roles at these programs, they need to trust a little bit too, because this is going to be their opportunity to grow. It's not going to be all sunshine and rainbows through a college Division I season.
And the great thing for, you know, 95% of the teams their goals are still in front of them. You know, there's, you don't get eliminated necessarily in week six or week seven of the college lacrosse season. A lot can still happen. Conference tournament is the safety valve for most of these teams. And just a different note, since we're in the middle of March Madness, the Wednesday, Thursday of March Madness is just like one of the greatest days for sitting on the couch and watching TV, watching all those games happen. The Thursday, Friday before Selection Sunday are the two best days of lacrosse that you're going to see, because it's all of these conference tournaments. Basically they start in the morning and they go all night. Most of the teams, there's only so many at-large bids. So most of the teams there are playing potentially the last games of their seasons. They're seniors who are, this is the last time I'm going to play for my team if we don't win this game today. It sets up just a really explosive, full of high stakes games, and it happens all day. Most of the games are on, some level of quality broadcast that you can watch. I feel like it goes every year. I feel like I have this rant about this day of the year, and it goes a little bit like under the radar, but it's like, that's the day you should take off work, is that Thursday, and just, sit and veg out and watch the games all day. It's also our most stressful set of 3 days or so between that into Selection Sunday, but it's all worth it because it's so awesome. All right, let's get into it in terms of, real quickly, just what to watch this weekend. We already talked about Loyola at Navy. That's another TV game. So that's, if you're listening to this on Wednesday, it's Wednesday night, 6 p.m. on CBS Sports Network. They do a great job with the broadcast. Usually have like a really nice post-game interview and the whole thing. So definitely make sure to watch that. Big Ten Thursday. This is kind of a nice little wrinkle in the schedule where we've got a handful of Big Ten teams playing, midweek games and not just like, these are high stakes mid-10 games. Ohio State versus Michigan, that's going to be on the Big Ten Network at 6 o'clock. Maryland versus Oregon that's not going to be on Big Ten Network, but that's at 5 o'clock. And then an out-of-conference game, Northwestern versus North Carolina. This is about as big as it can get. 8 p.m. on the Big Ten Network. Again, the Big Ten Network, tremendous in terms of broadcasting lacrosse. I remember years ago, there was actually a situation where the women's championship wasn't going to be on TV and the Big Ten Network stepped. It was one of the ones that Northwestern was in, and the Big Ten Network stepped in and broadcasted at the last moment. This was kind of in the infancy of when the Big Ten Network started out. So they have a history of really pumping some resources into those women's lacrosse games. And then teams that we've talked a lot about in this podcast, kind of going against each other, Yale versus Princeton at noon and Syracuse versus Virginia at noon on Saturday. So those are going to be some good wins. And then it's another impactful Sunday. The thing that I love about women's lacrosse is that you don't just get games between, starting between noon and 1 p.m. on Saturday. They go, basically midweek. We've had a lot of good Friday night games, and then they'll go through Sunday as well. But we've got Michigan versus Penn State. That's another Big Ten Network game on Sunday. Notre Dame versus North Carolina on the ACC Network on Sunday. And then USC versus Northwestern. It still sounds silly to say, but that is also a Big Ten game as well. USC new to the conference. That will be a ranked game as well. USC ranked in the top 25. So a lot to watch this weekend. Any parting words about the slate coming up, Deemer?
No, I would just say I think it's funny because I was not looking at the weekend watch when I was shouting out some of those matchups, and it just seems to be that every single one is coming up. So I'm excited. I think these are all great games. I do have to give a shout out to Big Ten Network because I think their streams and their rewind capability on their streams is second to none. Mm-hmm. Super easy to go back and click through and get to goals and watch games. So I'm excited to see how UNC responds to that loss on their home turf last year, lost by 6 goals. I think they'll come in with an edge. This game 2 years ago was battle tested. I feel like there was controversy around cards and something like that. So I think like it's going to be an intense personal game. So I'm excited for that one. And Yeah, you made some great points, Matt, around Michigan with some upcoming opportunities. Ohio State, Coach Barnes is doing a great job there. So that's going to be a battle. And, the midweek to weekend, there's a lot of great midweek games going on. So it's hard for teams to, they got to turn around and prepare.
Deaver, I didn't even realize that 2 years in a row that Notre Dame has beaten North Carolina. They beat them in 2023. That was a 16-12 game, at least during the regular season. It doesn't look like they played in the postseason. And I don't know, North Carolina feels like they are on a warpath of revenge right now with the way that their season got derailed because of injuries last year. So I wouldn't want to be any team in their way, let alone a team that has beaten them 2 years in a row. So curious how they come out with the emotional edges that they have in that one. Emily, any last words here?
No, I'm just excited for another good week of lacrosse.
Awesome. So it's midseason. Check out our midseason All-Americans that are going to be on Inside the Cross this week. Deemer, thanks again for joining us. This was awesome. And shout out to Alyssa. Hope you're listening. We'll catch you back soon here when you get back. But thanks to everyone for listening. And we can't wait to watch lacrosse this weekend and going forward.